Well, the song was basically written after I had the second album all written pretty much and recorded.
Wow. Okay.
It had all the songs on it, you know, and but I felt it was lacking. It needed something, and I wanted to have a big song that was about America.
Right.
And that all the other songs would kind of have a relationship with, of some sort.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I found out that the record company that I was on was going to go out of business in the midst of this three-album deal.
Right.
And so that was very, you know, dispiriting.
Right.
And I was quite unhappy about that, of course. And, but I just pressed on, you know, and because I had this idea. And I was around a lot of people in those days. You know, there were a lot of very talented songwriters and singers around. They weren't great singers, but some of them could write really good songs, and they were okay singers.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of them around, and they were writing, you know, good songs in country music and in folk music and in rock and roll, of course. And so I was out to write a song that was gonna, you know, really knock everybody back.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to come up with, and in those days, if you came up with a really good idea, there was an audience that was, you know, would listen to this.
Uh-huh.
They were interested. You know, I was in competition with Cat Stevens and people like that. I wasn't.
Yes.
People like Harry Chapin hadn't even come along yet. Even before Jim Croce, he hadn't come along yet either.
Uh-huh.
But I had this idea for this, you know, big song about America, but I didn't want to write it in, this land is your land, or kind of Woody Guthrie type of thing. And it was a Shiloh song, The Power and the Glory, that was another type of a,
right,
you know, big attempt at a big America song. And so I had I always have weird ideas for songs sometimes. Sometimes some of my ideas are very, pretty vanilla, but this was a weird idea, and that was that politics and music flow parallel forward.
Okay.
And I even think today, you know, you have kind of a spectacle rock without much attention to detail or to music, and you have a kind of spectacle politics without much attention to reality. It's just strange. But my theory seems to keep holding up all the time.
Did you?
Anyway.
Excuse me, Don, did you say skeptical? Or I didn't. I want to get that word right that you used in the last sentence. What was that word?
Spectacle.
Spectacle. Okay.
Yes, everything is a spectacle now.
Every
show is, you know, $1 million cost to mount a rock and roll show.
Yes.
Whereas before, if you go back and look at the Beatles performing in Japan or Germany, whether they go on stage, they tune their own amps, they turn around and they start to sing, you know, Paperback Writer, just off the record.
Right.
Now it's like bombs going off and screens.
Yes.
You know, people flying around and balloons being lowered and God knows what else, you know, elephants. But, so it's a spectacle now because it's distracting from the fact that there really isn't any music there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's a fan dance, you know, it's a form of entertainment that is specifically not very musical.
Right, right. Now,
you know,
uh-huh.
That's what we have now, for better or for worse. And I'm not putting it down. It's just the form of entertainment that we have now that's prevalent. People want to see, and you know, a spectacle when
yes.
they go to see a concert. They just want to hear some people singing some songs. Which is why I'm amazed that people pay to hear me. I mean, my band, all I do is sing my songs, and I fill theaters and auditoriums and sometimes much bigger places.
Well, it's the power of your songs, Don. They love the songs. They could be a 40-year-old song, and they it means a lot to them. So they come to the show, and they really feel good about that.
The thing that people forget sometimes is that I sold millions of albums, and in some case, hundreds of thousands of albums.
Uh-huh.
And I've sold millions of albums around the world. So people got to know songs like Crossroads, Winterwood, Empty Chairs, Castles in the Air, Your Wonderful Baby, Dreidel, If We Try, songs like this. And of course, American Pie is, you know, far bigger than all those songs, but they still know many, many, many songs, you know?
Yes.
And so that was always a wonderful benefit. The American Pie album sold very, very well, and people... It is a successful album, but it wasn't going to be because I hadn't written that song yet. But, you know, and it would take a couple of months, I guess, to really... get the players who I had in the studio to play the song like I wanted it.
Right.
I couldn't get the producer that I had to rock and roll. I couldn't. He kept thinking this guy's a folk singer and he wants to make a folk album, and he was folk oriented. He didn't really have rock and roll chops, and I couldn't get him to rock. You know, and he wouldn't believe that, you know, that this is what I want. People would try to say, well, this isn't what Don McLean does, but I do so many different things, you know. So it's really quite a fight to get this song to rock.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. Now,
but I,
go ahead.
I was able to do, and we made the record, and it was instantly successful. It was almost like the minute a person heard the song, they wanted to buy it, or they wanted to hear it again, and that's a hit.